These are the real problems with Vernon, Florida, a.k.a. Nub City.
You ever seen a man's brains?
I done had my gun on him, you know. And when he got up there, he was walking a little too fast to shoot him because I wanted a sure shot. And what I done, I just whistled. And he stopped, and he looked. And when he looked up, that was the end of it. Pow!
As you'll notice, I didn't play a typical trailer before the beginning of this podcast because there really isn't a trailer for this movie. This movie is known to a lot of people as somewhat of an underground documentary. Now, it's directed by Errol Morris, and Errol Morris has had a long-standing career, and he is one of the better-known and more prominent documentarian filmmakers out there. He's been an Academy Award-winning recipient for his films such as The Fog of War, which came out in 2006, and he is the type of filmmaker that we'll go and do some exploration of individuals in a certain circumstance. He also tends to interview more eclectic individuals that may come off as a bit comical or absurd, but he always clears it with the people that he's interviewing and lets them see the footage for themselves to make sure that they're not offended by anything that he has portrayed or the way that they have presented themselves. So he's a very personal filmmaker, and he likes to make sure that all of the people that he's interviewing for his films are very comfortable. And he is a very respectful individual. He isn't one of those rogue documentarians that want to capture footage and regardless of what's going on or apologize later for some kind of uncredited capture of a person doing something that they may or may not like. With that being said, that brings me to his documentary, Vernon, Florida. Now, Vernon, Florida wasn't always the name of this particular documentary. As a matter of fact, it was originally titled Nub City. Yes, nub as in nub of your fingers or your hands or any other body part that may have an amputated limb. Now, the reason why this movie was originally going to be called Nub City is pretty much the entire focal point of this particular episode. Now, when I talk about a real problem, these were some serious problems that were taking place. Basically, what had happened was you'd have to go all the way back to the 1950s because this movie was actually made and released in 1981. But the story began all the way back in the 1950s because in real life, Vernon, Florida, yes, it's a real city, real town in the panhandle of Florida. Vernon, in the 1950s, like much of the country, was going through an economic downshift in terms of goods and services. And gradually, all of the steamboats that were carrying a lot of tourists were passing through the waterways and they were just rapidly disappearing. They also had steamboats that were providing goods and services and exports and imports that were no longer going through the waterways because they had changed the regulations and they just weren't making enough money to necessitate these types of travel expenses. And also, that being said, the primary railroads were also just moving on through because they weren't stopping in Vernon, Florida anymore just because of the economic downfall of the entire city. So that was all happening for the town at the time, but the biggest blow that Vernon, Florida had taken was whenever they closed the local sawmill. Now, the sawmill there had a majority of the residents, mostly the males, working there because there were too many other jobs that were in town that they could just go to. Otherwise, they'd have to travel out of town or in some other location. But once that closed, it was just a complete blow to the economy of Vernon. What had happened was that there was one individual, and now this is getting a little bit more intense because there weren't any names. Like, there's no names, nothing that I could find, nothing that Errol Morris would probably want to show. But there was an incident that took place in the mid-1950s where an individual had a severe accident, and in doing so, he had to have one of his body parts amputated from his body. Technically, it was his leg. So he had his leg amputated from his body because of the severity of the accident. What had ended up happening was that he received a check from his medical insurance company saying, hey, this is for the accident. We're sorry. You know, the company or whoever that he possibly sued gave them a payout for the accident. He ended up cashing out quite big for it. So what that started to do was that people saw that check that he received. Just a couple of his friends and family members, they see that this check came in, and to them, it just sparked this crazy idea that said, hey, maybe we should forge or fake certain accidents to where perhaps we could get a payout similar to this. And you may question the fact that, yes, you know, there is insurance fraud. There are things that you can do to potentially put yourself in a situation where you can sue someone. I mean, it happens all the time. It happens every day to this very day. But The severity at which the residents, or some residents of Vernon, Florida, took this is beyond comprehension. They didn't just say, like, hey, I'm going to walk into a supermarket and slip on the floor and say, oh, my back or my neck, or stop short on their brakes and have someone rear in them and say, oh, my neck is hurt. No, they went to the extreme measures, much similar to this guy. And this guy, it wasn't his fault. He actually was injured. It was an accident, his situation. It was a tragedy for him. This wasn't a decision that he made to have his leg amputated. But the people thought, okay, we really need to sell the notion that we are injured. So what we're going to do is we're going to sever body parts. Yes, sever their own body parts for medical insurance scams. And it's just mind-blowing because they started out with their fingers, right? Because, okay, I'm not going to take off a whole foot or a leg just yet. They started out with their fingers. And you were in situations where it could have gotten pressed in something, or industrial accident or motor accident, whatever it may be. Now, the methods that were being used for the amputation started off small, and they were using saws. So they were using saws to basically saw off their appendages, you know, starting with the fingers, all the way to the hands, all the way down to the arms, and even so much the entire arm. And same thing with your feet. Started with the toes, went up to the ankles, went up to the leg, went up to the upper leg. I mean, just the whole thing. A lot of people were realizing that sawing your appendages didn't really seem like so much of an accident, as some cases, the cut lines were way too perfectly straight. And I mean, you can't really be too accurate when you're sawing off appendages. Not that I've ever done it myself, but these people were keen on the sense that it didn't look more like an accident. So they had to step up their approach to how they were removing their limbs. One method that tended to be a more favorite or preferred method was to basically take a shotgun and literally shoot off your appendages. Now, these shotguns ranged from 12 gauges to single automatic rifles. And basically what they were doing is that they were shooting off their hands, shooting off their arms, and just really pulverizing and mutilating their bodies. Because in that case, they can say that there was an accident with a rifle, they were hunting, whatever it may be. It just seemed like a gunshot wound tended to be more accidental than sawing off your arm. Like, who would believe that? How can you explain something like that happening so clean cut? That was definitely the preferred method, was basically just taking a straight shotgun to blow off your appendage. And this became an entire scam, so much so that Errol Morris decided to go and investigate the situation. The whole point of his documentary was to go and talk to some of the residents of Vernon, Florida. And he basically had the courage to go up to a bunch of Southern residents who are packing firearms, who know people that are very dangerous. And he's literally asking them, hey, so why did you cut off this body part? And how much did you receive from what medical company? Now, mind you, that's not his initial approach when he was interviewing these people. He started out his documentary by working in real time, and he was there for about a week. So in his week that he was there in Vernon, Florida, shooting the documentary, he was just doing basic interviews with the town residents. And the whole notion of Nub City, as Vernon, Florida became a nickname for, it didn't cross his mind to start there. He wanted to kind of ease his way into the residency to tell people who he was. He had already had one documentary under his belt, so he had that credential to tell people, say, hey, like, I'm a prominent filmmaker and I'm here to interview everybody. So if you could sit and talk with me, that would be great. And of course, you know, any kind of small town mentality, and it doesn't necessarily have to be a small town. Anybody in any kind of normal residency sees a film crew there, because it was just him and his cameraman. He worked guerrilla style. So it was a close proximity shoot. Like, he didn't even have a sound operator. He didn't have a light guy. I mean, it was just a very, like I said, when I say guerrilla, that means just indie style, just basically handheld, you do it yourself. And whenever that approach was being taken, people get excited whenever they hear, oh, you're filming a movie here in my town? This is exciting. So yeah, of course I would like to be interviewed for your movie. That's kind of how he got all the footage that he did so far, because everybody was real excited to talk to him. And the interviews that he conducted weren't really groundbreaking stuff. It wasn't anything that alluded to the whole medical insurance scam that he was really there for. He was just kind of, like I said, easing into the situation. He starts to get into the nitty gritty of the documentary. And in doing so, people were quickly realizing hey, you're showcasing me in this negative and very illegal light. We don't like this, and we don't like you after all. So word got out that his true intentions were to film and interview people with these medical scams. He was severely beaten outside of his hotel room, just got jumped by a couple of residents. Nobody knew who it was. And even if they did know, the police probably didn't want to do anything because now they see him as an outsider. So all the goodwill that he had built up while filming the normal resident part is just completely lost because, okay, now this guy's here to basically rat on me. Is he gonna tell everybody what we've been doing? Like, what's going on here? And so they didn't like that. He got jumped pretty bad and he was in the hospital there. Luckily, the Vernon Hospital was willing to take him in. He was there for an entire week. After he got out of the hospital, he thought better of doing the documentary that he wanted to do. So the original title, Nub City, was no longer on the table. He said, well, I'm here. I got financing to do a movie here. I might as well continue on with just interviewing the residents. If you go and watch this film, as of this date, it is currently streaming on Prime. It's on YouTube. And it's only 55 minutes long. So he didn't even get a full feature-length film out of this. I mean, I guess you can consider that, but it's more of a short film. But he very much intended to have a two-hour-plus long film because he was going to really get into the investigative aspect of the movie. But unfortunately, he didn't. Like I said, if you go and watch the movie, it's 55 minutes long, and everything that you see in it was basically footage that he had already captured and just stuff that he decided to finish off because, like I said, he had got financing from his production company to do the movie. Now, what he did decide to showcase in the movie isn't exactly not entertaining. I mean, he really did find some really eclectic people from Vernon to interview. And for example, it's just basically there's no plot. It's just a bunch of surreal monologues from a police officer, this obsessive turkey hunter, a pastor fixated on the word therefore. There was a couple that were convinced that the sand that they keep in a jar is growing more sand and therefore growing a sand person. And there is an old man who claims he can write with both hands, and he also has a turtle, a pet turtle that he calls a gopher. So I mean, these are the type of people that he interviewed. And what's interesting is that the city clerk at the time, her name was Sharon Cobb, she was a little bit perturbed by his decision to interview only the more eclectic people, because there weren't, not everybody in town was like this. And like I said, this is already 20 years past the time of the Nub City insurance scandal. So a lot of people really didn't do that scam so much anymore. And they also were just trying to put it past them. So, I mean, that's kind of what got him in trouble, basically, by him poking his nose around in the investigation. I mean, even there was a clerk here that there was a quote here that I found from the city clerk, Sharon Cobb. She says, he picked all the nuts in Vernon. So that really established her opinion on that. Now, one mathematical fact that I discovered was that beginning in the 1950s, the majority of these scams took place over a 3-year span. Now, the policy payouts began at $5,000 per case and ending upwards to $300,000, dependent on the higher value of the policies that were being taken out. You adjust this for inflation. Now, the range today would be around $53,000 to $3 million in insurance medical payouts. With a population of around 700, 50 of those residents were considered Nub Club members. The movie went on to premiere at the New York Film Festival in October of 1981, and it was met with rousing acclaim. Critics loved it. Roger Ebert himself said Vernon, Florida was not a blockbuster, but it was definitely an unforgettable film, and he gave his endorsement on the picture. And it was also hard for him to distribute it because a lot of theaters didn't want a movie that only lasted 55 minutes long. So he got distribution in the home video market, but again, never really gained that kind of acclaim that he would hope to see had it been the Nub City documentary. Fellow filmmakers and Errol Morris's peers were asking him about the movie and were a little bit curious as to why he decided to pick such a basic topic. Well, he started to tell them about what had actually happened. And that's, of course, when people were really curious about the documentary and curious about the events that transpired 30 years prior to this one. They were pitching people down in the Florida panhandle who worked in insurance to start investigating these claims because this is fraud. It got down to an insurance agent in Chipley named L.W. Birdshaw, and he was starting to do some investigations, and he found some pretty interesting things. And he actually has a quote in the St. Petersburg Times in 1982 that has, and I quote, A list of policyholders included the following: a man who sawed off his left hand at work, a man who shot off his foot while protecting chickens, a man who lost his hand while trying to shoot a hawk, a man who somehow lost two limbs in an accident involving a rifle and a tractor, and a man who bought a policy and then less than 12 hours later shot off his foot while aiming at a squirrel. He was looking at all these different claims and therefore found the fraud. What was unfortunate is that you couldn't really prosecute a lot of people because either they were too old or they had already died. So a lot of the scams kind of died with them. I wish that I could tell you that Vernon, Florida was going to be no longer in the public light or in the news, but I can't, because 2 years later, in 1984, June 20th, 1984, according to the report by the Associated Press, the Vernon City Council was discussing the firing of the town's only police officer. As a former school teacher spoke in protest, Council President Narvel Armstrong gaveled him down and adjourned the meeting. Well, the next part would be hard to believe if I didn't have audio to prove it. A cameraman for WMBB in Panama City happened to be there, and his footage shows Armstrong. I don't have the video for you, but I can play the audio. So a slight woman at the age of 46 with a white blouse and a helmet of brown hair walked past another woman and backhanded her in the head. And it created this massive brawl. And what was really interesting is that one of the guys in the fight had a hook for a hand, and he was the one that was just swinging. And I guess he forgot that he didn't have a fist. So the hook for his hand was really gashing a lot of people up and sent three people to the hospital with serious injuries. It's just bizarre because a lot of people saw that man and immediately thought, just like anyone in Vernon, Florida, who may have an amputated body, the first thought in their mind was, oh, he was part of the Nub City Club, the Nub Club, and he definitely got an insurance payout. But I'm going to go ahead and play you some audio from a press release of that very incident right here.
One of the most spectacular incidents occurred in the quiet rural community of Vernon, Florida, in Washington County. On June 20th, 1984, during a routine Vernon City Council meeting, the meeting was suddenly erupted into violence. This video was captured when a bloody brawl ensued over the discussion of the firing of the city's only police officer. These pictures pretty much explain what happened that night. Junior Armstrong was convicted of aggravated battery and battery and sentenced to 4 months in jail, fined $500. His son Coleman received a 6 month jail sentence for the same crime. Both men represented themselves during the trial and appealed. Meanwhile, the woman who started it all, Arvell Armstrong, was suspended from office and eventually resigned. She pled guilty to battery and received a suspended 3 month sentence, and she was placed back on the Vernon City Council. No one opposed her when she ran for re-election the following November. And that's the way it was back on June 20th, 1984, during a routine Vernon City Council meeting.
I like how he considers that a routine city council meeting there in Vernon, Florida. Seems like that town could have had its own television show, much less a documentary about it. I want to conclude this episode by talking about Errol Morris again, and I just feel so bad for the filmmaker that he didn't get to film the movie that he intended to do and what it could have become. It could have become one of the greatest documentaries of all, I can't say of all time, because there's been some amazing documentaries out there, but it's definitely one that you can't forget. And just like any one of us that has a project or a dream that we would like to further and we don't get the opportunity to do that, you feel missing. And I'm just glad that we're able to have outlets like this podcast to discuss things like this, to understand the hidden meanings behind some things, and to discuss the problems that took place and the solutions that may or may not have come from them. And I want to play one clip of Errol Morris being interviewed on David Letterman, where he's actually talking about his approach to filmmaking.
How does your style of...
By the way, this clip could have been set up a little bit better, because what you're seeing in the clip is, after founding the Pet Cemetery, he has now made the decision to convert it into a church.
Oh, I see. So it's also a religion and a pet cemetery.
Yes, kind of, all combined
one
together.
One-stop shopping, yes, for pet owners. How does your style of documentary filmmaking differ from other people?
Well, I think you can see, just looking at the clip, that there's been no attempt. A lot of documentary films made today, people have handheld cameras, they scurry around, they try to hide, they try to remain as inobtrusive as possible. In this kind of filmmaking, we stare down the subject, almost like a big game hunter. There's no attempt made to hide at all. In fact, The camera is put on a tripod, and they speak directly to the camera. Mm-hmm. So it
are does... people receptive to that? Does it take them a while to warm up to that notion?
I think they love it. Gives them an opportunity to perform.
Do these people feel that they're being made fun of or made light of?
Everybody in the film has had an opportunity to see themselves, and they all like themselves in the film, and they all like the film as well.
So it's pretty much a direct representation of what they would be talking about or saying in their own living room or with their friends or whatever, huh?
More or less.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Real Problems podcast. We are currently streaming on all available platforms. That includes Spotify, Apple, Amazon, Audible. We're going to be going up on YouTube Podcasts whenever that converts over from Google Podcasts. And if you're not subscribed to the show, please subscribe on any of these platforms that you listen to podcasts, because then you'll know immediately whenever I finally upload one of these new episodes. And thank you to the show's new followers. You can follow it on Instagram, Real Problems Podcast. The show is also on TikTok, where I'm basically playing small clips from this show, and so you can follow us there. If you enjoyed this podcast, please listen to the Screen Addicts podcast. It's another show that I co-host with my good longtime friend, Chris TV Viegas, and we basically just talk about movies, TV shows, and other pop culture things pertaining to entertainment. We have topics that we showcase every week, and we also discuss the things that we've been watching, because like true Screen Addicts, we watch a lot of stuff that we like to talk about. Please subscribe and listen to that show. If you have any questions or want to submit any corrections or something that I may have gotten wrong or something that I completely omitted from a story, please do share so. I will read your letters on a future episode. I have no problem doing that. I like to make sure that all the facts are as correct and accurate as possible. And you can write me at realproblemspodcast@gmail.com. Thank you all for listening. And that's a wrap.